You're listening to the Tokudo Ordination Ceremony for monastic Jeffrey Kyokai Onjin Plant, given by Shugen Arnold Roshi on June the 10th, 2018. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you would like to make a donation, please visit our website at zmm.org/donations. Thanks for your support.
We're doing Shuke Tokudo, which is a full ordination for Anjin, who's been in training now for quite a number of years. And this means to leave home. And to put this into a little bit of context, very soon after the Buddha's enlightenment, as he began encountering, meeting students, people who were drawn to his teaching and wanted to devote themselves to this path, he began to ordain people, men and eventually women as well within his Sangha. And so that tradition has continued all throughout these many hundreds of years. The ordination itself, going through some evolutions, beginning in the life of the Buddha himself, as his Sangha grew, what ordination was, how it was conducted, went through some changes. As Buddhism developed further and evolved and moved to other countries, China, Korea, Japan, Southeast Asia, and within the various traditions of Buddhism, how ordination was conducted, what the monastic was being ordained into in terms of the precepts or the rules of ordination or of the religious life has been evolving. And so the ordination today is within our own tradition, the Zen tradition, within the Mahayana tradition, and also within our own Sangha, ordination that was developed by Dada Roshi in the early years of this monastery and then has continued to evolve. In Western Zen, the Zen tradition, ordination more often than not means to be ordained as a priest, which usually means living essentially the life of a lay student, having a home and family and work, but being ordained and living one's life as a priest. And Dada Roshi wanted to develop a monastic tradition here. And so we have done that in ways that are continuing the tradition of monastic training in the Zen and Mahayana tradition, and also in some ways that are different than what has been done traditionally. And that'll be touched on a little bit as we go on. The Buddha said that the Sangha is made up of four essential aspects: the male and female monastics and male and female lay students, and that each has their own particular role, both within their own practice and life as a practitioner, but also within the Sangha. And so here in our Sangha, the lay and monastic communities are very much intertwined and mutually dependent upon each other. The monastics, we could not live this life and have this home if it was not for you, the lay Sangha. And without the monastics, it's highly unlikely, I think, that we would be able to pull this off. because the monastics have no other work. Our work is, the Sangha is this place of training. And so we live and practice and work together, the monastic and lay, in a very beautiful, interdependent, codependent relationship, which is really vibrant and essential. And as Dada Roshi used to often emphasize, that both paths are complete in their own way, have their own integrity, their own vitality, and they are also not utterly distinct, of course. To arrive to this place, the monastic has gone through a period of discernment, which, of course, begins with their first contacts with the Buddha Dharma, and then encountering, beginning to practice, finding their way to this place, becoming interested and so on, becoming a student, and at some point coming into residency, which is a requirement because monastics make their life here, and then receiving the precepts. And this is all happening under the request of the student. In other words, none of this is being, at the directive or at the request of the teacher or the monastics, but it's all being initiated by the student. And after receiving the Bodhisattva precepts, they can then ask to become a postulant, which means they change their robe. It's essentially a lay robe, but it's black, and so they begin to make that transition and begin to, they're still a lay student, but they're beginning to see themselves more as a monastic and sort of try that on. What is that like? And also be seen by the Sangha as a monastic. They're also, by virtue of living here longer, their ties and their sort of connections with their previous life outside of here is beginning to loosen a bit. And so they're getting a sense of what would it be to really make one's life here. And then there's the novitiate, where they take vows, put on the koromo, the monastic robe, and take the vows of the monastic and their intention is to develop those within that period of discernment. And now they're really living their life as a monastic and now seeing much more clearly whether this is the path they want. And then if they want to continue, then they can request full ordination. And this is happening with the monastic council. And so at a certain point, the student, rather than meeting with the guardian council to request to come into residency or the teacher to receive jikai, they begin to shift and make these requests towards the monastic council, which is basically the group of ordained monastics. And so this is really happening in a very close, ongoing working with the monastic council, who, of course, are living with the student and practicing with and helping to guide. And so by the time the student reaches this point, they've been, their request has been met and affirmed, not just by their teacher, but by the monastic community. And really, by virtue of that, by the whole Sangha. Because the student's role within the Sangha and their life and whether it really seems to be the right life for them is being brought out, not just by the student, but by the whole community. And so the monastic council and teacher are really looking for signs of affirmation that this is indeed the life for this person, not just by asking the student and seeing sort of their experience of it, but really looking at the whole community. So in its very real sense, the whole Sangha is part of, a very vital part of bringing, in this case, Anjan to this place. So we'll begin the ordination with three bows, series of bows. And this is recognizing sort of the larger part of our interdependent lives. And so the first series of bows will be to the Buddha on the main altar and our original teacher, without whom we would not be here today. And the second series of bows is to his parents, Anjan's parents, and they're not here today, and so he'll be bowing in the direction that they, where they are, and then recognizing the family, the bloodline, or lineage, if you will. And then the third series of bows is made to the ordination teacher, in this case, myself. And now the main altar will be closed, and the altar here is established as a place of ordination. And so in this way, the teacher, the ordination teacher, is sitting not just in the place of the Buddha, but really all of the enlightened masters who have brought this teaching and this monastic tradition to us today. The period of time between each of these steps is between becoming a student, taking the Bodhisattva precepts, postulancy, novitiate, and full ordination is at least a year. And typically it's longer than that. Depends on, you know, various factors, but it's at least a year. So it's by design intended to last at least 5 or 6 years before full ordination. Now, for those of you who have either received Jikai or have been part of a Jikai ceremony, the receiving of the Bodhisattva precepts, you'll see that much of the ordination is that. Traditionally, that is ordination, is receiving the Bodhisattva precepts as a monastic. And these are the precepts that, in one sense, go back to the time of the Buddha, but in their particular form, come to us through Dogen, and his studying with his master in China. And so this is 13th century origins. So we'll begin with the invocation of the three treasures. Everyone, please, Gaisho. Namo jipo butsu namo jipo ho namo jipo so namo hanchi shakyamuni butsu namo daisy dai hi kyu ku kanze on bosa namo dajin fugen bosa namo daishin manjushri bosa namo koso joyo daishi namo taiso josa daishi namo riki dai so shibo satsu. Be one with the Buddha in the 10 directions. Be one with the Dharma in the 10 directions. Be one with the Sangha in the 10 directions. Be one with our original teacher, Shakyamuni Buddha. Be one with the great, compassionate Avalokiteshvara Bodhisattva. Be one with the great wise Samantabhadra Bodhisattva. Be one with the great wise Manjushri Bodhisattva. Be one with Koso Joyo Daishi. Be one with Taiso Josai Daishi. Be one with the successive great ancestors. Namu Jipo Butsu Namu Jipo Ho Namu Jipo So Namu Hanshi Shakyamuni Butsu Namu Daizi Dai Hi Kyu Ku Kanze On Bo Sa Namu Daijin Fugen Bo Sa Namu Daishin Manjushri Bo Sa Namu Koso Joyo Daishi Namu Taiso Dosai Daishi Namu Riki Dai So Shi Bo Satsu. And next we'll do the gatha. The monastics will do the gatha on shaving the head. So the tradition beginning with the Buddha, that when he left home, he shaved off his topknot, which was not just his hair, but his station, a symbol of his station in life, his position within his community and within both small and large. And so it was a very powerful gesture of his home leaving and leaving behind all that he was, his identity, how he was seen, how he saw himself. And so we continue that tradition. And of course, our hair, our appearance is a significant part of how we identify ourselves to ourselves and to others. And so the monastic shaves the head as an ongoing practice in liturgy. So last night after sitting, Ajahn's head was shaved for the first time as a monastic by the ordained monastics. And today we will complete that. So we'll begin by the Gathon shaving the head. In the drifting, wandering world, it is very difficult to cut off our human ties. Now we cast them away and enter true activity. It is in this way that we express our gratitude. As we shave our heads, we renew our vows to live a life of simplicity, service, stability, selflessness, and to accomplish the Buddha's way. May we manifest our lives with wisdom and compassion and actualize the Tathagata's true teaching. In the drifting, wandering world, it is very difficult to cut off our human ties. Now we cast them away and enter true activity. It is in this way that we express our gratitude. As we shave our head, we renew our vows to live a life of simplicity, service, stability, selflessness, and to accomplish the Buddha's way. May we manifest our lives with wisdom and compassion and actualize the Tathagata's true teaching. In the drifting, wandering world, it is very difficult to cut off our human ties. Now we cast them away and enter true activity. It is in this way that we express our gratitude. As we shave our heads, we renew our vows to live a life of simplicity, service, stability, selflessness, and to accomplish a Buddha's way. May we manifest our lives with wisdom and compassion and actualize the Tathagata's true teaching. Only the Buddha can remove this last piece of hair. Do you give her permission?
Yes, I do.
Gotcha. So every time the monastic shaves their head, they're reminded and reminding themselves of the difficulty of liberation, but also that it's an expression of gratitude to be able to do so. One at a time, just the chromo.
his robe.
So even though our training is a sort of a blending of the traditional Soto and Rinzai lines, the robe is in the Soto tradition. Now we'll do the Gatha of Atonement. Recognizing that we all arrive here as a result of karmic actions and their results. And so we've all created karma that is binding, and we've also created karma that is beneficial. And it is by virtue of both of those streams of karma that we're here today, that you are here today. So everyone please go show, and we'll do this in call and echo, so everyone can take do the Gatha of Atonement. All evil karma ever committed by me since of old. On account of my beginningless greed, anger, and ignorance. Born of my body, mouth, and thought. Now I atone for it all. All evil karma ever committed by me since of old. On account of my beginningless greed, anger, and ignorance. Born of my body, mouth, and thought. Now I atone for it all. All evil karma ever committed by me since of old. On account of my beginningless greed, anger, and ignorance. Born of my body, mouth, and thought. Now I atone for it all.
Now I atone for it all.
So the Buddha Dharma recognizes that each of us has the whole range of human possibility. And so it completely embraces our negativity, our selfishness, our greed and anger and delusion, and all of the manifestations of that. And at the same moment, in the same moment, it also challenges us to aspire to liberate ourselves from that bondage and to transform selfishness into generosity and anger into compassion and delusion into enlightenment. And so it's extraordinary in the sense that it's continually embracing everything that we ourselves often struggle to embrace. It is not startled, the Dharma is not startled by our humanity. And yet, and at the same time, it challenges us to actualize, realize and actualize who we actually are. And both of those work together in a very, very essential dynamic that is the path itself. And now we'll take refuge in the three treasures, Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. And this is the beginning of receiving ordination, beginning of the Bodhisattva precepts. So everybody got show please. Namo kiye butsu namo kiye ho namo kiye so kiye butsu mujo san. Kiye ho rijisan, kiye so wagosan, kiye bokyo, kiye hokyo, kiye so kyo. I take refuge in the Buddha.
I take refuge in the Dharma.
I take refuge in the Sangha. I take refuge in the Buddha, the incomparably honored one.
I take refuge in the Buddha, the incomparably honored one.
I take refuge in the Dharma, honorable for its purity.
I take refuge in the Dharma, honorable for its purity.
I take refuge in the Sangha, honorable for its harmony. I have taken refuge in the Buddha.
I have taken refuge in the Buddha.
I have taken refuge in the Dharma.
I have taken refuge in the Dharma.
I have taken refuge in the Sangha. Namu kiye butsu namu kiye ho namu kiye so kiye butsu mujo san kiye ho riji san. Kiye so wagosan, kiye bukyo, kiye hokyo, kiye so kyo.
I vow to take refuge in the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha.
And now the pure precepts. The first pure precept is to not create evil, to devote yourself to a life of not harming, inner and outer. This is the abiding place of all Buddhas. This is the source of all Buddhas. Will you maintain this?
I vow to not create evil.
Practice good. This is to dedicate your life to doing all that is good, seen and unseen, known and unknown by others. This is the Dharma of Samyak Sambodhi. This is the way of all beings. This is the way of all beings. Will you maintain this?
I vow to practice good.
The third pure precept is to actualize good for others. This is the heart of the Bodhisattva vow. To this is to transcend the profane and to go beyond the holy. This is to liberate yourself and others at all times. Will you maintain this?
I vow to actualize good for others.
The three refuges are complete within themselves. If we really understand them and take refuge, rely unreservedly, then we encounter the whole of the Buddha Dharma. The pure precepts are complete unto themselves. We can spend our whole lives, you are committing yourself to spending your whole life, studying, examining, practicing and realizing these teachings. Within them you will discover the whole of the Buddha Dharma. The 10 grave precepts are also this way. The first of the grave precepts is to affirm life, to not kill. To affirm life, not kill. Life is non-killing, Dogen said. The seed of Buddha grows continuously. Maintain the wisdom life of Buddha and do not take away life. Will you maintain this?
I vow to affirm life. I will not kill.
Be giving. Do not steal. To cultivate a great generosity, to cultivate non-attachment, to have faith in non-attachment. The mind and externals are just thus. The gate of liberation is open. Be giving, do not steal. Will you maintain this?
I vow to be giving. I will not steal.
To honor the body, the whole mind, the whole person. To not misuse sexuality. To recognize the roots of desire. To study the nature of desire. To study how that manifests through sexuality. To see how sexuality is a part of all of life. To see its wonder, its beauty, and also its power to do harm. Or rather, our power to do harm when we are not generous, when we are not affirming of life. The three wheels, body, mouth, and mind, greed, anger, and delusion, are pure and clean. Nothing is desired. Go the same way as the Buddha. Honor the body. Do not misuse sexuality. We maintain this.
I vow to honor the body. I will not misuse sexuality.
The Bodhisattva vows and all of Buddha Dharma is directed equally, inwardly and outwardly. So all of these teachings, all of these precepts, all of these vows are directed directly into your own being and directly towards every other being. Manifest truth, do not lie, to not be afraid of truth. The Buddha has said over and over that when we face real truth, we will be startled. We will feel fear. We will be anxious. And we will turn back to everything that we've used in the face of that fear. And so this vow is implicit within it is great courage. The Dharma wheel unceasingly turns as there's neither excess nor incompleteness. Sweet dew permeates the universe. Gain the essence and realize the truth. Manifest truth. Do not lie. We maintain this.
I vow to manifest truth. I will not lie.
An important part of these vows is that by taking these vows, we are not only committing to being open and responsive and taking responsibility when the fact of our not living these vows is brought to us. But equally importantly, perhaps even more importantly, is that we ourselves are not waiting for that, that we are initiating, we are ahead. Not waiting, but looking, being self-seeing. The next precept is to proceed clearly, to not cloud the mind, to see all the ways in which, within this life, we can cloud the mind. The mind is the originally pure and clear Buddha mind. Do not let it become cloudy, do not be defiled. This is why we have to practice. We have to see and experience for ourselves that pure and clear Buddha mind. It's only that undermines and dissolves the fascination, the enchantment, the faith that we have in our cloudiness. Proceed clearly. Do not cloud the mind. Will you maintain this?
I vow to proceed clearly. I will not cloud the mind.
See the perfection, do not speak of others' errors and faults. In large ways, in small ways, outwardly and inwardly. In the midst of the Buddha Dharma, we are the same way, the same Dharma, the same realization, and the same practice. To the extent that we don't see that, is the mirror of our delusion, is the mirror of our suffering, and the suffering that we inflict on others. Do not speak of others' errors and faults. Do not destroy the way. We should reflect on this, these words of Dogen's. To speak of others' errors and faults, how in that are we destroying the way? Will you maintain this?
I vow to see the perfection. I will not speak of others' errors and faults.
To realize self and others as one, do not elevate the self and blame others. To see how in every moment when this is occurring, our own anxiety, our insecurity, our fear, our sense of insufficiency, that's where we need to turn our attention. That's what we need to examine. Buddhas and ancestors realize the absolute emptiness and realize the whole earth. When the great body is manifested, there's neither inside nor outside. When the Dharma body is manifested, there's not a single square inch of earth upon which to stand. Realize self and others as one. Do not elevate the self and blame others. Will you maintain this?
I vow to realize self and others as one. I will not elevate the self and blame others.
give generously, to not be withholding. One phrase, one verse, 10,000 forms, 100 grasses, one Dharma, one realization, all Buddhas, all ancestors. Since the beginning, there never has been anything to withhold. Give generously, do not be withholding. Will you maintain this?
I vow to give generously. I will not be withholding.
Actualize harmony. Do not be angry. To really, you know, all the multitude of ways in which anger appears, the vastness of the spectrum of aversion, to not turn it towards others, to not turn it towards oneself. It is not regressing. It is not advancing. It is not real. It is not unreal. There is an illuminated cloud ocean. There is an ornamented cloud ocean. We need to examine them both. It is not real. It is not unreal. Actualize harmony. Do not be angry. Will you maintain this?
I vow to actualize harmony. I will not be angry.
Experience the intimacy of things, do not defile the three treasures. For every practitioner, this is vital. For a monastic, it's your imperative. It is the life that you're entering. It is the life that you are unreservedly taking refuge in all of its real aspects, in all of its unreal aspects. It's to not only align with, but realize identity. Expounding the Dharma with the whole body and mind is the essential matter. All virtues return to this ocean of reality. You should not comment on them, just serve them. Practice them. Experience the intimacy of things. Do not defile the three treasures. Will you maintain this?
I vow to experience the intimacy of things. I will not defile the three treasures.
Now, when you first received the Bodhisattva precepts, it's about 6 years ago, and you received them as you were at that time, as you had to, which meant where you were in your practice, where you were in your path, how you saw the world, how you saw yourself, your understanding of the Buddha Dharma. And now, having traveled this far and receiving these precepts, it's not the same. Receiving them as a monastic, it's not the same. So to really understand that and to take these anew. Now the monastic vows. So these are the vows that Dada Roshi developed as he was developing for us this monastic life, this monastic path. The first of the monastic vows is a vow of simplicity. This means in your body, speech, and mind to cultivate and live within non-complication, to have faith and simplicity in straight ahead, in looking in and seeing what is naturally clear and open, in looking out and seeing things without prejudice, to not accumulate wealth, to live simply in real and unreal ways, in body and mind, with objects and things, to conduct yourself humbly and without contrivance, and to develop faith in that, to not be afraid of that, to put oneself, yourself, freely and intentionally within a codependent relationship with the Sangha. When I was ordaining, my father said, but you won't have your own money. That makes you vulnerable. And I said, exactly. So you rely upon the Sangha for all that you need. And that puts you in an intimate relationship of codependence that is wondrous and vital. It means you offer your life to the Sangha as you receive your support. It also relives, and so it's recognizing that reliance. This vow of simplicity is also a vow of spiritual poverty. Not accumulating within, not accumulating without. And it's having a love and appreciation for things as they are. They don't need to be ornamented. You don't need to accumulate. And also a great value of things so that nothing is to be wasted. Again, inner and outer. And to carry that understanding, that reverence into your relationships with everything. The monastic lives the life, lives the vow of simplicity. Will you maintain this?
I vow to live a life of simplicity.
And so this means that if a monastic it comes into money, receives an inheritance, that they can do whatever they want with it, but they can't keep it. That works. Next is the vow of stability. So you've been studying these vows, you've been practicing these vows, you've been working on them in Doksan, sitting with them in your Zazen. This vow of stability, like the vow of simplicity, is absolutely essential. It's a spiritual life. It's recognizing a spiritual life is a disciplined life, which means a clear, deliberate, committed life, an intentional life, and a life in which you follow through. Anyone can raise an aspiration. Anyone can express a desire. Even a heartfelt desire. But to live that, to follow through on that, through all of the obstacles, through all of the challenges, through the moments when you think it is not possible, in the moments when you think you are not capable. It's an effortful life. It's not lazy. It's not careless. But also, it's not busy. It's not overly active. It's not passive. It's also not obsessive. It's a careful path. It's a meticulous path of ongoing commitment to wholeheartedness. This path, this vow also includes the major decisions of one's life, family, children, travel, that they have to be considered and resolved. And so your life is here. Your family is this Sangha. You have make the commitment not to have children. That if you were to have children, that you would take off your robes and take care of those children. They then would become your primary responsibility. In our Sangha, the possibility of being in a committed relationship with another monastic is possible. That's the path you've chosen. That means that becomes, that is a central part of your practice. And that both is an important and special relationship, and your vow to treat all beings equal is also true. How do you do that? How do you live that day by day? This vow also is directly pointing to the mind of kleshas, of the afflictions, that puts one on a path of agitation and instability. And so to continually find your true ground, your stability, your zazen, and the challenges that are ahead, the surprises, those things that will startle you, and discovering your true power. And that's a dangerous word today because it's misused, power itself and the word. But there is a truth to this, spiritual power, which is only spiritual power when it's serving to liberate. to fulfill your vows. So all the energy that you might have poured into a family or a career, you dedicate to this life. You give it away to this life, to the three treasures. The monastic lives the vow of stability. Will you maintain this?
I vow to live a life of stability.
The vow of stability is expressed in the old master's calling out each day to himself, Master, yes, Master, do not be deceived by others. No, I will not. The vow of service is the next monastic vow. This is the vow of service to your teacher, to the Sangha, to the seniors, to your monastic brothers and sisters, and to everyone who comes here seeking the Dharma, and to everyone that you encounter in your life, and to everyone you will never encounter. It's that large. It's a vow of service to those who you find easy, that you want to move towards, and to those you find difficult, that you would want to move away from. But the vow of service holds you. To all creatures, to this great earth itself. And it's based on what is needed, which means you have to have a clear mind. That's the not being prejudiced in all the meaning of that word. It's to be free of grasping and self-concern, because that's what binds us from being of service to others. It's also about not being lazy, both inwardly and outwardly. Because when we are, then service seems an inconvenience. It's to be of service when you're asked and when you're not asked. And to live in service is really just that. It's just to be of service. It's to ask, how can I help you? What do you need? It is both a path that will open up for the rest of your life, and it's also very simple. The monastic lives the vow of service. Will you maintain this?
I vow to live a life of service.
Next is a vow of selflessness, and this is the vow to live each day, every day, in all of your thoughts, in all of your words and actions, in every relationship, in your work, in your zazen and liturgy, to be free of attachment to and delusion about the sense of a self. I am this, this is me, this is mine. And to practice unceasingly letting go. It is to be realized, and it is a practice day by day. And to plumb the depths of this, your own basic nature, the great emptiness, in all that you do, in all that you see. Every vow finds its source and inspiration in this vow. That's why the life of the monastic is a dedication to practice, to your zazen, to going deep inwardly for the rest of your life, and cultivating an intimate understanding, a deep understanding of your self nature. Selflessness is liberation when realized deeply, when practiced in every moment. The monastic lives the vow of selflessness. Will you maintain this?
I vow to live a life of selflessness.
And the fifth monastic vow is to live the Buddha's way. So how do we practice and maintain a deep, meditative, interiorized life within this place, within this relative cloister, and commit ourselves to bringing more equality and justice and peace to our world. We live in a different time than the Buddha. We are practicing one Dharma, the same Dharma, but in this time and place. So how do you live in the inspiration, the light, the luminosity of the Buddha's life, the actual life of the Buddha, and all of the lives since, and bring that into your own vows, into your own life? This is a living tradition, which means there's a ceaseless dynamic between maintaining the inner light of what we call tradition, which is the heart of the Buddha Dharma, and yet not letting it become institutionalized, dead, or static. And this has to take place first and foremost within the lives of each one of us, within the life of you as a monastic. The monastic vows, to live the Buddha's way, will you maintain this?
I vow to live the Buddha's way.
These 16 precepts, the three treasures, the three pure precepts, and the 10 great precepts were handed down by Shakyamuni Buddha generation after generation to my teacher, to me, and now to you. These five monastic vows were given to me by my teacher, Dadaroshi, and I now give them to you. Will you maintain them well?
I will.
Will you maintain them well?
I will.
Will you truly maintain them well?
I will.
Everyone, please, Gosho. When sentient beings receive the Sila, they enter the realm of the Buddhas, which is none other than the great enlightenment. Truly, they are the children of the Buddha. When sentient beings receive the Sila, they enter the realm of the Buddhas, which is none other than the great enlightenment. Truly, they are the children of the Buddhas. When sentient beings receive the Sila, they enter the realm of the Buddhas, which is none other than the great enlightenment. Truly, they are the children of the Buddha. Buddha's bowl. Kichimyak. Lineage of the ancestors. Buddha's robe.
Vast is the robe of liberation.
Everybody needs brothers and sisters. Mountains and Rivers Order, Zen Mountain Monastery. This is to confirm that Jeffrey Plant, having fulfilled the monastic training requirements of the Mountains and Rivers Order, has on this 10th day of June, 2018, received the 16 precepts of the Buddha Way, the monastic life vows, full monastic ordination, the lineage chart, robe and bowl, and the Dharma name, Kyokai Anjin. And now the attendant will lead Anjan around so that each of you can acknowledge and congratulate him on his ordination. So in this way, this happens together. We all do this together. Singing, it's a little bit like waking up and realizing you've just become an octopus. So let me say a little bit about your ordination name and your Dharma name. So when you received Jikai, your teacher gave you the name Anjan, which was a splendid name. The character for Anjan An means to fulfill, to complete. And Jin is kindness and gratitude. So to live and practice and manifest a complete, fulfilled kindness and gratitude. Your ordination name is Kyokai. Kyo means respect. And the root of respect, going back in Western language, is relationship. To be in relation to. And so respect means a particular way of being in relation with, to be in, to have regard. Kyo also means reverence. And so to be in relation and relationship with things in a awareness or a sense, or a mind and a heart of reverence. And reverence possesses both the sense of awe, of encountering something that is so vast, so boundless. And also it conveys a sense of dread. But in this case, that awe is sometimes that fear, and sometimes that's a binding fear, but sometimes it's a leaping forth fear. It's not the fear of a small mind. It's the fear of recognizing that we're in the presence of something that is so vast and boundless, and we want to know. We want to understand what is this and what is this relationship. Kai is world, the world, the 10,000 things, inner and outer, the skandhas, everything you perceive, everything you know, everything you don't know, everything you've experienced, everything you're yet to experience, the world. It's the earth and all of its creatures. It's all of its systems. It's all of your systems. So Kyokai is to be in a, what we might say, call a right relationship, a relationship of respect that has humility and confidence, that is based in a sense of enthusiasm to learn, to understand, to serve. And it requires a very careful attention that is aware, that is attentive. It means giving what's needed. Also, it means receiving what's needed. Not taking more than we give. Giving more than we take, in other words. So Kyokai is to have a reverential relationship with the world. World reverence, world respect. To care deeply. To recognize that what you do and how you do it is the mind and heart of each action, is the Buddha Dharma, is your experience of this life, and that matters. That matters. That's why you're here. That's why all of these people are here. Because it matters. To nurture a profound relatedness, the vivid expression of simplicity, emptiness, of stability, harmony, of service, giving life, of selflessness, not accumulating, and of living the Buddha's way, this true Dharma. Kyokai, reverence for the world. You know, along much of the path, we can look and it seems that it's been a long path, a circuitous path. But at a certain point, we look and we realize it's been a straight shot all the way. The way of the Buddhas and ancestors is an ancient path that's long and inspiring, and a long and inspiring line of dedicated men and women who have given their lives, sometimes at great cost, at great sacrifice, to leave home, to choose this life, to live simply, and place the Dharma at the center of everything. It's a demanding life. It's a challenging life to cease from harm, to live a life of simplicity. It's a demanding life to fully understand and realize this, to study and master the mind, to practice good, to live within this community, to see and be seen, to hold account and be held accountable, and to merge your life with others, to see yourself and be both demanding and gentle, tough and relaxed. That you nurture your own development. Remember that each of us, one of the greatest things we can offer is who we are. In a sense, what else do we have to offer? And so by actually just living a simple, confident, humble life, we have the opportunity to be an example to others. So today you step through this threshold. Your life does not belong to you. That has always been true. But now you've devoted yourself to that. And every action and all of their consequences do belong to you. And that is not a burden. So the question now that you have is, how will you use this life, these vows, this path, to have faith in yourself, to have faith in this Dharma, to have faith in your Sangha, in your practice, to have faith, to have faith. May your life go well.
Thanks so much for listening. The monastery's quarterly journal, Mountain Record, has a new home at mountainrecord.org. For over 30 years, Mountain Record has been offering spiritual seekers of all faiths a unique journey through words and images. Each quarterly issue delivers a thought-provoking array of classic teachings, contemporary wisdom, stunning photographs, and news from the Mountains and Rivers Order. For more information, to subscribe, or to read our open access articles, visit mountainrecord.org.